I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors, Producers Wealth. If you're interested to set up your infinite banking policy correctly and have access to a coach that will help you use your infinite banking strategy to grow your business and your investment portfolio, and having your capital work in more than one place simultaneously, and protect your capital from market downturns, taxes, predators, and creditors, you can watch a presentation of exactly how you can do this at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com. Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create and grow income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Are you tired of trading your time for money? Do you desire freedom today instead of retirement in 10, 20, or 30 years? I'm MC Lobsher, and this is the Cashflow Ninja. This is Cashflow Ninja. I'm MC Lobsher. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Cashflow Ninja podcast. And spending your most valuable resource, your time, once again with me, everything, and I really mean everything in the Cashflow Ninja universe, is at CashflowNinja.com. CashflowNinja.com, if you haven't subscribed to our newsletter, at CashflowNinja.com/subscribe, you're missing out. I'm delivering gold nuggets every week into your inbox via email with all the things that I believe that business owners and investors should be aware of right now, and you're also going to stay informed of everything that happens with Cashflow Ninja and at Cashflow Ninja. That's cashflowninja.com/subscribe. I've got a great guest today for the show. Kent Ritter is joining us. He's an entrepreneur and a real estate investor. Kent, welcome to the show.
MC, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. I've been a listener for quite a long time.
Awesome. Now, for folks not familiar with you and what you do, can you please share a little bit about your background and journey with us?
Yeah, happy to. I'm an entrepreneur kind of through and through. Really, before getting into real estate, was a partner and founder in a manager consulting firm. Built that up when I was living in Chicago, as we were talking about living, we both lived in Chicago at a time. Yep. As I sold that business, as we exited, that was really what kicked off my real estate career. I had capital from that exit, knew I didn't want to have all my eggs in one basket, didn't want to have it in the stock market. So I started looking for alternatives. And as I looked at alternatives, real estate was really what spoke to me. Checked all the boxes I was looking for. It wasn't correlated with my other investments. There were tax advantages, cash flow, appreciation, all those good things that we look for. So as I went down my real estate journey, started about 2015, did a whole host of different things, fix and flips, short-term rentals, bought notes, did this journey that led me ultimately to multifamily investing and then larger scale multifamily investing. And the light bulb really went off for me when I learned about what a syndication was, where I learned that I could pool my money with other people's money. We could go buy something bigger and better than any of us could individually. And so that's what, over a period of time, invested, got better at it. In 2019, founded Hudson Investing because I felt like we had a pretty good process in place. We started actually taking on other investors. And we started doing that, pulling money together and going out and buying bigger and better assets. So since 2019, I've been working within Hudson Investing. We've acquired just south of 900 units, about $100 million in acquisitions, all throughout the Midwest. It's really our focus is buying value add properties throughout the Midwest.
So why did you pick the Midwest? What are some of the reasons that attracted you to the Midwest market? And which market in the Midwest?
Yeah, so I'm based in Indianapolis, Indiana, which is kind of in the heart of the Midwest. And from there we have properties in several cities in Indiana, and then in Western Ohio and Northern Kentucky. So you think about Cincinnati, Louisville, Lexington, Dayton, Ohio, markets like that. And so why the Midwest? Well, there's one practical reason was that I just live here. I live here. I've grown up here. I knew it really well. And I felt that I could have a competitive advantage because I was local. And because it was drivable and because I had deep rooted relationships already in several cities. So that was one. strategically, I started looking around and I started looking where everybody else was buying. And everybody else was just hyper-focused on basically the Sun Belt and then the West, like Arizona. And so I said, you know, do I want to try to compete where everybody else is competing, or do I want to kind of go away from the competition and be able to find, I think, relatively better deals? At the end of the day, I'm a value investor. So we're looking for value. And the Midwest provides, in my opinion, the best value in the country relative to how much you're getting and the cash flow, more specifically, you're getting, to speak to the cash flow ninjas, per dollar, right? And so that was a strategic focus, was let's go against where everybody else is going. We know there's great deals everywhere. You just have to be able to root them out. And we know we can get better cash flow kind of pound for pound in the Midwest. And so those were really the initial thoughts on why to focus there. And then as things have evolved, as we've gone through COVID, you know, and as we've seen things develop, we've seen this kind of resurgence in the Midwest, I think being driven from, you know, folks being able to work where, like, the Midwest generally has a lower cost of living than a lot of other places in the country. So I think as people are able to work remotely and live where they want, we've seen people moving into the Midwest. We've seen tech hubs and other companies like such as Salesforce, which has a headquarters in Indianapolis, bringing headquarters here because, again, I think low cost of living, good access to employees and great lifestyle. And especially in Indiana, we've seen kind of this biotech with Eli Lilly and other things coming out of COVID, this kind of biotech and pharmaceutical resurgence too that we're really seeing. And so we're seeing a lot of good advanced manufacturing and high tech jobs coming into the Midwest. And so we've kind of been able to catch this wave now. And we've seen some rent growth here that historically the Midwest has been kind of steady eddy, right? And that's why it's great for investing. It's great for cash flow investing, but we're starting to really catch some of these waves that some other markets, I think, are more mature in and farther down the path. The Midwest, I think, is just kind of coming on the upswing.
Have you seen a movement in the Midwest of people going to places like Indianapolis and Indiana? A state that, for example, treated the COVID, the COVID a little bit different than other states, for example, like Illinois.
100%. I mean, I'm one of them. I left Chicago in 2017 for other reasons, but Indiana had a lot, you know, from lower taxes, more favorable client for landlords, and just business owners in general, right? There's a lot of things to like. Definitely, we've seen just kind of an exodus from Chicago into Indiana. There's actually billboards along the highway going from Chicago to Indianapolis talking about come to a state that works, pay lower taxes. There's kind of these advertisements now. It's kind of funny. But yeah, absolutely. Indiana has benefited from that. And I think we're going to continue to see that. I think treatment of, you know, things like COVID, and I think just more of a common sense approach. Yep. Has definitely benefited cities that have been able to, I think, just act with what I would call more common sense.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. One of the wealth strategy secrets of the ultra wealthy is that they make more income and grow their net worth every year and legally pay less in taxes. They also grow their capital when markets go up, down, and sideways. They grow their capital in economies that grow and boom, and in economies that are in recessions and even depressions. If you are a high income earner and trying to figure out how to legally reduce your taxes while receiving cash flow and growing your capital, Pantheon Investments have a great opportunity right now. By leveraging Pantheon Investments' holistic wealth strategy and its exclusive relationships, you can access an opportunity right now in oil and gas. This opportunity will help W-2 earners to legally reduce taxes, generate cash flow, and grow their capital. This exclusive opportunity will also position you to be on the right side of rising oil and gas prices. This is a limited offering available to accredited investors only. To learn more, go to cashflowninja.com/Pantheon. That's cashflowninja.com/BANTHEON.
Yeah, I would think, because I was thinking about that and I'm like, a lot of people went west or went to, you know, Arizona, they went to Texas, mm-hmm. they went to Florida, South Carolina, different kind of states. But there might be a lot of people that didn't want to make such a big move. You know, maybe their family still close by, or maybe that wasn't financially feasible. So now you're just moving one state over, essentially.
Yeah.
You know, there's probably a lot of folks in that St. Louis metro too, I could think that lived in Illinois, but worked in St. Louis, Missouri. They're probably mm-hmm. just going to go over to Missouri now, right? So I was just kind of thinking in those pockets. And I would also say Indiana is almost similar, right? That Northwest Indiana kind of pocket, which where a lot of people live there, but they worked in Chicago.
That's right. That's right. And there's a ton of that in Northwest Indiana. And I mean, they're even talking about building high-speed trains over to connect Northern Indiana, kind of halfway through the state all the way into Chicago, because I mean, so many people do. If there's some arbitrage, if you can live in Indiana and work in Chicago, cost of living is much different, taxes are different, everything.
It's funny how people come up with solutions on those arbitrage, and people are smarter than, you know, they know the game. It's a game. Even in the area where I live in Bucks County, mm-hmm. There were a lot of people that lived here that worked in New York City. And if you look at it on a map, they're like, how is that even possible? But yeah, you have a train about 15, 20 minutes away here that you jump on, and within an hour, you're downtown New York, essentially. But yeah, you live two states over.
Yeah. If you're going to drive into New York, it's going to take you an hour and a half anyway. So you have to hop on a train and get there. It's not bad.
Yeah. So what is it the Indianapolis area that the majority of the units are that you guys acquired, or is it in what are some of the other markets that it's in?
Yeah. So we're fairly evenly distributed between, I would say, the Indianapolis MSA. So there's a couple kind of surrounding suburban areas around Indianapolis, and then Cincinnati and Dayton are where our biggest unit counts are. And then we also have properties in, we have a couple properties in Louisville. We have a property in Lexington, Kentucky. So it's kind of that, like if you put a dot in Indianapolis and then you drew about a 3.5 hour driving radius around it, that was really how I started with my first markets.
That's great. What is going on? Because there's a lot of stuff happening in Cincinnati, too. That's also kind of like on the border of Kentucky, right? That whole
Cincinnati. Yeah, it's right on the border. Yeah, it's kind of right where Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky all come together.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
Cincinnati.
An interesting part of the world. Dayton, Ohio, too. What are those markets like? And also, you know, if you want to talk about the other ones, too, what's currently going on there? Because we've got rising interest rates. You know, what's the climate like in these markets?
You know, one of the crazy things about Cincinnati is Cincinnati has seen some of the highest rent growth in the country this year. I mean, Cincinnati's showing up on lists right next to Phoenix, Arizona, Las Vegas, Dallas, which you historically, again, just wouldn't expect. But I've seen some metrics showing year-over-year rent growth there up in the 20% range, I think it was like 28%. And I think it's because you know, something just generally about the Midwest that I like, because I think so let me step back and say, here's my hypothesis, is that there's going to be markets in this country that are oversupplied over the next 5 years. I think if you look at the country in general, there absolutely is still a housing crisis. The numbers I just most recently saw was we're about 4.5 million units short of what we need in this country. But as you look at individual markets, I think there's going to be markets that I think one of the biggest risks that we're facing is going to be oversupply. And that's how real estate cycles happen, right? There's demand until supply catches up with demand. And then all of a sudden prices drop and it doesn't make as much sense to build. So over time, demand overtakes supply and then you have these cycles, right? So there's going to be certain markets where that happened. It's not happening in markets like Cincinnati and Indianapolis and Louisville, right? So you constantly have this demand outpacing supply and we're not seeing big upticks in supply. And I think because of that, that's going to keep occupancy really high. In markets like Indianapolis, Cincinnati, Dayton, I mean, the occupancy rate in the markets is like 98%. There's just frankly not enough housing for people. And I think what that does, you think about like Econ 101, right? When demand outpaces supply, what happens? Well, prices increase. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing rent prices increase. The other thing is just that rents have grown so much less in the Midwest over the past, let's say, 10 years, where something we look at very closely is the rent to income ratio. So HUD, Housing and Urban Development, defines somebody as being rent burdened if they spend more than 30% of their income on rent. They're saying it more than 30% is unsustainable. Well, in many markets, I mean, markets like LA, people could spend 50, 60% of their income on rent. In other markets, it's very common to be north of 30. In the Midwest, largely, we're still on average only spending about 20 to 22% of our income on rent. So what that means is there's room for rent growth to continue and remain affordable. And to me, that presents, that shows opportunity, and it shows that there's continued growth that's able to occur while remaining affordable. I think in other markets, you're going to start to hit these affordability ceilings if you keep having 20% rent growth, you know, year over year, which we're seeing in some markets. And so if you really just think about supply constraints and you think about relative affordability and the ability to move rents up and maintain affordability, to me, those are great signs for the Midwest over the next, let's say, 5 years.
Yeah. And there, more people will probably move there too, because as you mentioned, I don't think people, you know, quite appreciate the importance of what you just mentioned, that ratio, you know, which is under 30. And because it's only one of the ratios. If you want to look at a society, right? And I've learned this from an economist too. Essentially, if you're looking at big social like problems manifesting itself, it's like when it's way over 30% that you're spending of your earnings just to live somewhere. And then usually when, what if you're spending over 40% of your income on food, that's usually like, now you start, I mean, if you think about it, that's like literally 70% just between those two is gone. Now you've got 30% and you've only paid for a place to stay and fed yourself and your family. So that's usually where people get squeezed. So I can see also, as more and more people get squeezed in other cities, that they would then, I mean, you have limited options, right? What do? Downgrade where you live, or you have to pack up and leave somewhere else where it's more affordable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that, to me, the Midwest is ripe to benefit from that. Right. And I mean, because again, it's some of the lowest cost of living in the country. And I think that, you know, as we see that, we start to see these, this resurgence, you know, in the parts of the country that have kind of been looked over for many years. But, you know, we're seeing, I think, vibrancy in these cities. I just saw Dayton, Ohio is on one of the top lists of future tech hubs. And you say, Dayton, Ohio, like, what the heck's going on there? Well, they have Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Like, they have a massive Air Force Base and government presence there. It creates a lot of jobs, a lot of engineering jobs. And it creates, you know, just an ecosystem for more more high-paying jobs and more tech jobs and defense jobs, you know, to come there. And so it's just interesting. You're seeing these little pockets that are coming together.
I want to take a moment to recognize one of our sponsors. My friend Dave Zook says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. At The Real Asset Investor, Dave and his team bring their investors high-yield investment opportunities across several asset classes for cash flow, tax impact, and equity growth. He and his team are one of the top five ATM operators in the country, and they have an investment opportunity available to accredited investors right now in the ATM space. To learn more about their ATM funds that produce tax-free cash flow, visit therealassetinvestor.com. What has happened to a lot of the towns, you know, that sort of was quote-unquote the Rust Belt, like hit pretty badly with the manufacturing? You know, because there's been some revival in some of those towns too, right?
There has been. I mean, there's still a lot of towns throughout the Midwest that just are struggling, right? They had one manufacturer and that manufacturer left and just nothing has come. We're definitely seeing a consolidation in that we're seeing, you know, we're seeing people move from towns and villages into secondary cities, you know, maybe like a Dayton, Ohio, or like a Fort Wayne, Indiana, right? Then we're seeing people moving from those cities into more into the larger hubs, like at the Indianapolis, the Cincinnati, the Columbus, Ohio, right? So we're seeing populations moving, and really it is those smaller towns and villages, I think, that are struggling the most to hold on to their populations.
Gotcha. So share with me a little bit your, just about what type of properties are you buying? Like, what does a good deal look like for you?
Yeah. So we think about things, that everything has to have first. Well, first of all, we're buying multifamily properties, right? Which are kind of fancy way of saying apartment buildings, right? We're buying apartment buildings that are B and C class. So we're not buying the nice newest stuff downtown, right? We're buying properties that were built primarily 1980s and newer, primarily suburban locations. Really what you would call kind of core workforce housing. You know, a lot of our tenants are renters by necessity, not by choice, right? They're long-term renters. They may always be renters. So it's a really steady tenant base. You know, and we're looking for properties that have a value add component. And what does that mean? Value add, right? So if you break it down simply on, like, I guess, a level of work needed on a property, right? On this side, you have a turnkey property, which means nothing needs to be done. You can literally buy it and just start operating with it, but the returns are low. So risk is lower, but returns are lower, right? Then on this side, you have a property that maybe it's an empty building, right? You're buying an empty apartment building, or you're buying a property that is not cash flowing, right? So it's a higher risk, but potentially higher reward, but a much higher risk, right? Value add sits right in the middle, where we buy properties that are already cash flowing, right? So it eliminates a lot of the risk. Like, I look at it as buying a business that's been there for 30 or 40 years, and we're just going to help that business make some additional cash, because there's a deficiency we can solve, whether it's a management problem, whether it's just lack of capital. Like, a lot of more mom and pop style owners just don't have the capital to maintain the building over time. So we're able to come in, make renovations, bring rents up to market, right? So we're looking to solve a deficiency and create value in solving that deficiency. So that's really what we're looking for. And then we're looking for markets where, you know, it's cities like Indianapolis, where we're seeing growth. Job growth and job diversity are two of the major things that we look for, right? Job diversity, meaning, again, it's not just one employer in town. If that employer leaves, everybody's out of work, right? We like healthcare, education, and government, because those are non-cyclical, stable job bases, right? So if you have universities, health systems, again, Air Force bases, things like that. And so we look for cities that feel the same. And there's a lot of those in the Midwest. And so those are places where we want to be: stable employment, good growth, where we know we can, you know, there's going to be opportunity now, but also opportunity, you know, 5-10 years down the road.
What is your outlook like in the next, I would say, 12 months? I know 12 months is a long time right now. So six to 12. I used to be like, oh, we're planning for 5 years. Now I'm like, let's do 12 months, because a lot can happen month to month, right?
That's right.
Yeah. What's kind of your outlook? Because the threats obviously is, you know, we have an economy that's struggling. Interest rates are going up, you know. They're essentially tapering in a falling economy, which is never ends well. But what are some of your outlook just for the markets and for real estate and the markets that you're in?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm overall bullish. I really am. I don't think the economy's faltering. I think if you look kind of below the surface. So yes, interest rates 100% are going up, and that impacts us as real estate investors. But I honestly think people focus too much on interest rates. I think interest rates are one of the levers that can impact your return on a deal, right? Mm-hmm. But really, if you dig deeper into the metric and you start talking about, people talk about interest rates related to cap rates, and cap rates is really just a metric of how you value a commercial property. It's really not true that interest rates move cap rates. If you look lower, what it really is interest rates affect the supply of money, and the supply of money moves cap rates. So the thing that happened during COVID was what we created. Was it six? It was like six, or was it maybe 9 trillion at the end of the day? New dollars,
like 40% of all dollars.
40% of all the money.
Yep.
right? So if you think about that, that most of that money, $5 trillion of that money is still sitting on the sidelines. It's still sitting in savings, investment accounts, right? It's not really been deployed. So while interest rates are going to go up, again, you have to look at things on a long-term scale. You have to look at things historically. You can't, if you compare interest rates right now to what they were during COVID or what they were even in the last 10 years, then yeah, they're up. But if you look right now compared to interest rates in the 90s, well, we're about on par. And I don't think interest rates are going to continue. I mean, I think we're going to settle in a relative range where if you can't do deals with a 5.5% interest rate, I don't think it's the right deal. Right. So I think while interest rates matter, I think people are too focused. I think if you think about the supply of money, you think about that money looking for assets, you think about money looking for hard assets to invest in. I think commercial real estate is extremely well positioned. And I think that demand for assets and hard assets is going to continue to keep prices moving. I think it continues to keep cap rates low. And if you just think about the global economy, I mean, what I think is cool is if you look at GDP, the economy grew 3%. GDP grew 3% during COVID. So like during a national shutdown, the economy grew 3%. I think it's tough to say that we're in a bad place when you see that kind of growth. Just thinking about the metric that there's like 2.5 jobs for everybody that wants a job in this country. It's tough for me to think that we're in a recession if there's 2.5 jobs for everybody that wants one. You know, if everybody, and what's happening, well, we're seeing wages go up, right? Which we haven't seen in a long time. We haven't seen meaningful wage inflation. And so I think my opinion, I'm actually very bullish on what's happening. Now, it will be somewhat market specific, right? You can't speak totally in generalities, but if I focus down in the Midwest and I focus in a lot of areas in this country, I think that there's tons of job opportunities. I think that we're going to have to be creative to figure out. I mean, right now, the bigger problem is employers can't find or keep employees, right? Employers want to grow. Supply wants to catch up to demand, but there's this limitation in workforce, right? So we're going to have to figure out some creative solutions. But I think that's the labor side. I think on the material side, supply chains will get figured out, right? People will, you know, we went to this like just-in-time inventory thing, and that kind of bit us in the butt when everything came to a stop. But that's going to get figured out. You know, people are producing more supply. Demand just came back way faster. Supply will catch up. And I think ultimately we're going to be okay. But yeah, I'm pretty bullish on things. I think over the 12 months, if you're asking me, I'm looking to buy because I think there's good opportunities. I think people are over-focused on negative. I think they're going to be scared. We're seeing less competition come to the table. And I think it's going to create some good buying opportunities for us. And so we're going to be very active.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right about interest rates being one variable of the deal. You know, it's like, it goes back to that thing, do you want price or terms? You know, there's so many variables, how you can structure and creatively structure deals. So there's still going to be deals in the economy. Now, you're an entrepreneur, you've started businesses, you've grown the management consulting business that you were helped building in Chicago. Was one of your first starts, and you're growing your business right now significantly, the Hudson Investing. What are some of the strategies that you've utilized to grow your business through the past couple of years since you've started, and what are you looking to do in for further growth in the future?
Yeah, so you know, Hudson Investing is really going through kind of a fantastic evolution right now, where it's really transitioning from really being all about me, and me really driving a lot of this process from finding deals to raising capital, wearing all these hats, to building out a true team and a true team of experts in their specialties. You know, we've recently onboarded a director of acquisitions, a vice president of investor relations, several team members to support them, and now really have these, we've gotten to the point where I can have key leaders owning these pillars. We have somebody 24/7 looking for properties, somebody 24/7 just making sure our investors are having the best white glove experience that they can, and allows me to step up and be more strategic as well. So we're in this really cool, now that we're, you know, we've done 13 syndications, about 900 units. We built this really solid base, but I look at it as like the rocket ship on the launch pad, right? We've built the launch pad and now we're ready to go. And I think from what we just covered on the economy, I think really the next 2 years are going to create a fantastic opportunity for us to really lean into that and grow and create some great returns.
Awesome. I want to recognize one of our sponsors, Penumbra Solutions. Life settlement investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the billion-dollar blueprint followed by institutional investors. And if you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements. That's cashflowninja.com/life settlements.
What are, you know, one of the things that I've observed from wealthy and successful individuals, they're always learning, they're always studying. What are some of the things you're studying and what are some of the things you're learning right now?
Yeah, so I've been just as we've been growing the team, it's been all about how do you grow responsibly and how do you create systems? How do you automate? And how do I help them be as effective as they can be? And so a lot of what I've been studying lately has been things just related to rituals and habits and how to be productive. A book I love called Deep Work, right? These big time blocks. So how do you set up your schedule? How do you set up your day? One thing I hated about when I was a management consultant was it was like death by meetings, where it'd be, you know, 9-10 hours of meetings a day. And it's like, well, when are you actually supposed to get anything done? So just creating a culture where meetings come last, you know, and there's these blocks where you can have productive time and only meeting when we need to meet and not meeting just because it's on the calendar. And the fact that every meeting doesn't have to be an hour just because that's what Google or Outlook defaults to. Right. So just being really intentional with how we spend our time, because to me, and that's why I'm so focused on habits and rituals, because to me, it's not these massive shifts. It's the little things that you do every day build up into big things over time. So if you're doing the right things day to day, it will create huge impacts over time.
Absolutely. Now, there are a lot of folks listening, and I know in our community that's looking, you know, they might look at the success that you've had too, and they're interested in, you know, where do I start in the syndication business? Maybe they've invested as a limited partner. Maybe they've done some GP deals and they're looking to basically start their own business. What are some of the things that you could share with them? Just some piece of advice of how to get started and where to focus.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say, first of all, figure out what you're really good at. You know, are you really good at analyzing deals? Are you really good at relationships and you're going to be able to raise capital? Maybe you have a good network already of high net worth folks, you know, and so figure out what you're good at. Maybe you have a construction background, right? And you can really lend a hand from the rehab and kind of construction management piece of it, right? There's a lot of different parts to be played. So I think when you're starting, figure out what you're really good at. And then go out and start networking and finding people that you align with, you're like-minded with, that have complementary skill sets. So if you're an analytical person, find that extrovert you can pair with, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a really good way to get started. I think especially finding people that are a little bit farther down the path. So like my first syndication, I partnered with a couple guys who had done, I think they were on their fourth syndication at that point. So they had done a few, they'd been through the process. I was able to partner with them, learn from them, also provide value. But I think partnering with others that are a little bit down the path and providing value is a great way to get started and kind of get your foot in the door.
Yep.
So figure out what you're good at, what you can contribute, find people to partner with, ideally find people that are a little farther down the path. But my biggest recommendation is just get started. I think so many people get stuck reading about it, and listening to reading and listening to podcasts are awesome. That's how I got started. But at a certain point, you got to take action. And so I think you take action by getting out and starting to network and going to meetups and going to live events and just starting to get in front of people, building that network. Because you build that network, opportunities will come.
Yep. And maybe you could speak to the role of mentorship and coaching too, because you're a big believer in that and continue to invest in that. What are some of the things that you could share regarding that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge component of mentors or coaches, both paid and unpaid. I mean, I look at it like this, like when I was coming up in school, you know, I had, you have tutors, you have coaches, right? Football coaches, basketball coaches, you know, strength coaches, everything. You have people that have been there and done that helping you advance and helping you advance faster than you could on your own. When we get to adulthood, all that stops, right? I mean, for the most part, like that really goes away. And I think a lot of people get stuck. I look at it as, why would we ever stop that process of learning from people that have been there and done it before and helping us kind of shortcut the process? And so, yeah, I invest a lot in mentors and coaches. I have mentors and coaches in several aspects of my life, from real estate to more like personal development, to exercise, right? Like different aspects, because I want to be the best that I can in all of these. And I want to learn from people that have already done it and been there. And, you know, Tony Robbins has the famous quote, it's like success leaves clues. And so to me, I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on mentoring and coaching, but I can guarantee you that I've saved or earned millions from spending those hundreds of thousands.
Yep. There's a massive, massive return on that investment, which it is. It's an absolute investment. And one of the questions I always ask some of our first-time guests is, you know, the show's about, we talk a lot about cash flow, we talk a lot about money, but it's also about leaving a legacy, right? So, and also passing on certain principles and values. So if you can't leave money to future generations, but we're only allowed to pass on three principles and values to them, to help them create wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would you share?
So three principles or values, man. I think it all starts with, integrity and just being a good person. And what that means to me is like doing the right thing, even when nobody's looking. I mean, I think no matter how, if you have a lot of money, don't have a lot of money. I mean, I think that's really what matters in life is being a person of integrity. I think that, I want to pass on an entrepreneurial spirit to my kids. That's one of my most important things I try to impart to them is that you don't have to follow the status quo. You don't have to just be a cog in the wheel. You can be creative and you can go out and you can make your own thing. And it could look a million different ways, but just get out there and try, right? I think that's extremely important. And the third one, I think, would just be the idea that I think that you want to continue to invest. You want to continue to invest in yourself, continue to invest in assets, right? And just have the ability to think outside the box when you invest. I know that's what a lot of what your content is about, right? Yep. But just, I see so many people just in this 401k trap. And all the data that's coming in, it just doesn't work. I mean, the people that are retiring, the first people when 401ks first started, the people are retiring like right now. And the data shows that they just don't have enough money. And so we know that you can't save $17,000, $18,000 a year and expect to live on the same income if you were making $150,000 a year, right? Just the math doesn't work. So yep. Invest in yourself and invest in other things, but take control of your financial future, I guess is what you could call it.
Yeah, no, those are great. And appreciate you sharing that. And to your point, no, we see it. We see it in our community. We see people reaching out to us. It's not working. And it was never designed to work. I mean, I've interviewed the inventor of the 401k, the first 401k, and he was saying it was never supposed to just replace your retirement planning. It was just to maybe another bucket, essentially. you know, to have some funds in, which now, I mean, it was such a gold mine for Wall Street that they went full blown marketing on this to try and make this the holy grail of retirement, which it's untested. It's never been tested before. And we see it. We literally see it. And markets are still, you know, equity markets are still high. You get a pullback of 30 to 40% and all these folks that have gone into retirement are now pulling money from a depleting egg, basically. So yeah, to your point, you have to think different. Get rid of the box completely. You know, I'll put it in recycling. I'm green. You know, get rid of the box. But yeah, you have to look at other sources of income.
Absolutely.
And think differently because it's just
you have to educate yourself, right? Like you got to educate yourself because nobody's feeding that information to you like they are, you know, on the commercials you watch on TV at night, right? Like it's, you got to go out and find the information. And if you do, I mean, I thought I was a pretty savvy investor and I didn't really learn about real estate syndications until, you know, like I said, maybe just 7 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I'd been investing in a lot of different things before that and just had never heard of it. So you got to go out and search the information.
Absolutely. This has been a blast, my friend. I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your journey and your knowledge and providing so much value for my listeners and my viewers.
Absolutely. Thanks, MC. I had a blast. Appreciate having me on.
And folks can reach you, by the way, kenritter.com. And where are the other places that they can follow you and stay informed of all the many areas, many things that you're in?
Yeah. Everything we got going on.
Yeah.
So, HudsonInvesting.com is also a great place to reach out where, that's really, if you're interested in learning about how to invest, what it means to you, what the journey looks like, and actually getting on our list to maybe make an investment, it's all at HudsonInvesting.com. Other than that, I have a podcast as well. It's called Ritter on Real Estate. And we really focus on multifamily investing. And I interview the pros so that you guys can invest like pros. And so if you want to really learn about how to invest in apartment buildings, it's a great resource.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much again. And thank you to all of our listeners and our viewers for spending your most valuable resource, your time once again with me on the show. Everything is at cashflowninja.com, cashflowninja.com. And you can join our newsletter by jumping on at cashflowninja.com/subscribe. Until next time, live infinitely. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.